Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Welcome back to another episode of the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, and we have an all Kevin Durant podcast for you today. Vinny Del Negro, the former NBA coach, and Bobby Marks, the front office insider for the Vertical. All that and more next on the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. Hey guys, before we get to Vinny Del Negro, I have to tell you about T-Mobile. Just one swing, home runs can be the ultimate game changer. At T-Mobile, we know how to change the game for good. T-Mobile is always listening and always improving by listening to our customers. We've doubled our LTE coverage to reach 309 million Americans, and our extended range LTE reaches two times farther and is four times stronger in buildings than ever before. Just as our network has covered you, T-Mobile has the Home Run Derby covered too. Want to have some fun? Fill out a bracket for the Home Run Derby. Make your picks in T-Mobile's Home Run Derby Bracket Challenge at T-Mobile.com/MLB for a chance to win a trip for four to Game 1 of the World Series. T-Mobile, we're changing the game for good. LTE doubled over 2015 and 16, no purchase necessary to enter or win, and 7-10-16, open to legal residents of the 50 U.S. states and D.C., have to be 18 or older, void where prohibited. For official rules and complete details, visit MLB.com/bracket challenge.
Yahoo Sports presents the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your host, Chris Mannix.
All right, so we are recording this podcast on Monday, and we are hours removed from the biggest decision since the decision. Kevin Durant's Oklahoma City Thunder, now ex-Thunder forward, headed to Golden State to be part of one of the most formidable lineups in NBA history, maybe the most formidable lineup in NBA history, teaming up with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and maybe just, you know, the super death lineup, I guess, is the only way you can start to put it with what's going on there. So we're trying to process all that and dive into the rest of free agency here in this podcast as well. To do some of that, let's bring in Vinny Del Negro, the former NBA coach with the Bulls, with the Clippers, now doing analyst work over at NBA TV, and Vinny joins me here on the show. Vinny, man, what... I don't think I could say I was surprised that it was Golden State, because this was always a possibility. But, man, just sitting back and looking what that team is going to look like, it's awing, I guess is a way to put it.
It is. I think it's everyone thought he would probably go back to Oklahoma City after they were up 3-1 against Golden State last year and had an incredible opportunity and weren't able to capitalize. But in hindsight, Golden State sits back, and I think if they had won another championship, maybe it would be harder for Durant to go there with the two-time defending champs, but it didn't happen that way. Cleveland got the championship, but in hindsight to now, Golden State is sitting there, and Kevin Durant feels like he can help them bring another championship to the Bay Area. So it's a shock. That lineup is in, by the way, they won 73 games last year without a Kevin Durant, so I don't even know what they're going to do this year, but there's no question it changes a lot of things in the Western Conference, and especially for Oklahoma City.
It's crazy. I mean, a couple things there. Number one, think about the shots that Harrison Barnes missed in that finals. And now substitute Kevin Durant for Harrison Barnes. Vinny, that's like a four-game series, really. I don't mean to get too hyperbolic there, but you know, Harrison Barnes missed so many shots in that series that Kevin Durant would ultimately make. The other thing is, like... The confluence of events here is amazing, because if Golden State doesn't come back from being down 3-1 to Oklahoma City, I don't think Kevin Durant goes anywhere. If Golden State finishes off Cleveland up 3-1, I think it would be really hard for a guy like Durant to just jump on the bandwagon of a two-time champion in the way that he did. I mean, this was, of all the talk we had all season long about what was Durant going to do, this was basically decided in some ways over the last, you know, 3 weeks of the NBA schedule.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, like I talked about and you just mentioned and went through, there's no question. I mean, it would have been harder for him to go if they had won or what have you. But at the end of the day, it didn't work out like that. He's in Golden State now. You know, Oklahoma City's going to have to pick up the pieces. The thing that kind of was a red flag to me, and I haven't looked at the numbers enough, but the red flag to me is when they traded Ibaka to Orlando. I mean, Ibaka's been a big piece. They've been together. He's a defensive rim protector. You know, they got Oladipo, I get it, but there's other guards out there. It's much easier to grab a guard than it is to get a big guy that's that skilled like Ibaka. And him and Durant had been together. Now, whether him and Durant got along as well as they said, or him and Westbrook, or I don't know all that. No one knows it. But at the end of the day, they've had a lot of success there. I know some of the guys personally. They're all good guys. But at the end of the day, I'll tell you what, this changes the complexion of a lot of things. But put yourself in Durant's situation. He's looking at saying, okay, I'm not getting any younger. I can go to Golden State, Clay and Steph and, you know, Bob Myers and Lakeup and Steve Kerr. They're all going to be there. Jerry West is behind the scenes, who's been a staple of the NBA for the last 50 years. So why wouldn't I go here? And by the way, as I get older, my statistics maybe go down a little bit because I'm not going to get as many shots, but I don't want to be I'm going to be one of the great scorers of all time anyway, but I need to add some championship jewelry to my resume. And the best way for me to do that is go to a team that is incredibly good, incredibly gifted, has won a championship, and probably, you know, you'd have to say should have won it again this year if it wasn't for some things going Cleveland's way. And I'm happy Cleveland got an opportunity to win one and LeBron and the whole situation, but it was Golden State series to win, and they didn't get it done.
Yeah, I don't know about the Ibaka deal. I would almost disagree with you there, just because everything I had heard about Ibaka's relationship with Durant and Westbrook is that it wasn't what it used to be. And Vinny, you can kind of attest to this. Ibaka wasn't the defender it used to be. It seemed like, and I wrote this at the time, that Ibaka was kind of touched with that Reggie Jacksonitis, that he was kind of interested in being a complete player and less interested in being the, you know, elite defender, rim runner that he was in the early stages of this Oklahoma City run. Everything I had heard was that Durant was on board and Westbrook was on board too with this type of deal. And wouldn't Sam Presti have had to have been crazy to make a deal like that without at least consulting with Durant on whether he approved of this decision?
Yeah, I mean, you would think so, but, you know, who knows how it all came down. But at the end of the day, Serge Ibaka is a heck of a player, and what he does for Oklahoma City, especially when Steven Adams in the lineup, it gives Westbrook and Durant more room to operate in their isolations, because Ibaka has become a very good corner three-point shooter. So he spaces the floor. Does he block some shots? Of course. Is his defense probably as good as it's been in the past? No, but I'll tell you what, a stretch four is hard to find. Everybody wants them the way the rules are. It helps your offense. It helps your spacing and everything. And Ibaka is a capable outside shooter, as we know, and he gives you some rim protection. So I would think Sam Presti would have went to Kevin Durant. But at the end of the day, without Kevin Durant being signed up, I think Presti had to make a decision that he felt was best for his organization. And if Kevin signed off on it, good. I can't imagine Kevin having, you know, being a free agent, having all the sit-down meetings with all these teams probably didn't make Oklahoma City feel quite as good or as positive as they thought they would.
Yeah, I mean, look, losing Ibaka was a body blow just because I didn't really buy into everything I was being told about how they were going to replace him. I mean, it was, well, we'll play Enes Kanter more at the four spot. I think that only works kind of in spurts and against the right teams. We'll play Durant at the four. I mean, okay, I guess that can work against the right teams. I was hearing, you know, Sabonis' name, the rookie that they acquired from Orlando. A rookie's not going to be ready to play in 1 year in those types of situations. I agree with you there that replacing Ibaka was going to be more difficult than perhaps Oklahoma City led on. But I like Oladipo in that team, just because you got to build a team that's going to be able to contend against Golden State. And Victor Oladipo's defense, and granted his shot making hasn't been great in his first couple of years in Orlando, but having him to chase around a Klay Thompson, I think that would have been a big lift and a big positive for Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I mean, hey, Oladipo's a good player. He doesn't have great size at that position. Klay Thompson, we know, is one of the best. But here's my thing is if you're in the meeting with Kevin Durant, aren't you saying, Kevin, We were up 3-1 against Golden State. We didn't get it done. We're going to keep the team together. We want to make another run at it.
Yeah.
We're going to go out and get another two-guard. We're going to get this is the most talented, deepest team you've ever been on. It was the first year with a new coach. We're going to have a better run next year. You're after your foot, your foot injury. You had a tremendous season. We were up 3-1 with our team. We're going to add a two-guard, and let's go after this thing again. Then he turns around and Ibaka's traded. Now they got Oladipo, and now they lose Durant. Who else, whatever else is going to happen. So I don't know exactly what the story is, but, I mean, Kevin Durant, I think he looked at it and said, hey, why wouldn't I go with these guys? As I get older, I can have less responsibility in terms of if I have an off night, I can still win. Guys are getting judged on wins and championships, and LeBron has one now, in Cleveland. Maybe I can go to Golden State since they didn't win it this year. And we can win 3 in a row, and I can be the catalyst to help them get over the hump. So, I mean, Durant just causes so many problems defensively. They can play small with Draymond Green, with Durant now as a 4-5 matchup up front with their three smalls. I mean, they were loaded before, and now you add a Kevin Durant. That is an incredible lineup.
Yeah, it's the super death lineup is almost, apropos for that type of team, because I don't know how you stop. Maybe you can't play it against big teams all that often, perhaps, but I don't know how you defend them when Durant's playing that four spot with Green at the five and Iguodala in the game. But let me ask you about the idea of a former MVP, a four-time scoring champion, basically going to a team like Golden State. I mean, you've coached guys in the past that have been the quote-unquote alpha males, the guys that have been stars in this league. Does it surprise you to see a, quote, alpha male in the prime of his career go to a team where, it's not going to be his team? And frankly, it's not like what it was in Miami either, because LeBron went to Miami and it became his team. I can't see Golden State, at least not in the foreseeable future, becoming Kevin Durant's team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an old school guy, so you would never see a Larry Bird, a Michael Jordan, a Magic Johnson back then in the 80s, early 90s or whatever do it. But what we've seen is the big three, whether it was Ray Allen or Kevin and Paul Pierce, and then it was, Wade and Bosch and LeBron, and all these guys are teaming up, and the free agent and the salary cap going up and the flexibility these teams are having with money, and everyone's got money out there right now, and it's only going to get even more dramatic next summer as it goes up even more. So, hey, at the end of the day, Kevin might have felt, and I don't know this, but I've won my scoring titles. I've won an MVP. All I want to do is win championships, and my best chance to win is in Golden State. It's a great city. It's a well-run organization, great fans. Well, they're going to hopefully be moving into a new building. I signed my 2-year deal. If I don't like it there, I can leave. If I do, I can sign my big deal eventually. He got his big Nike contract. It's not about the money. It's what makes him most comfortable with his ability to perform at a high level. And as he gets older, he can still win by not being the main guy. So maybe he can prolong his career if he stays there a long time. I look at like a Tim Duncan. Tim has played 19 years, maybe going to play his 20th year. But the Spurs have done a great job being able to, hey, Tim, you don't have to play 38 minutes for us to win. You can play 22 and we're still going to go to the playoffs. We're still going to get, and they just keep giving themselves opportunities to take a swing at it. And that's why Tim has 5 championships. So I think Golden State's going to be in the same thing where, hey, if Klay Thompson is off, Durant and Curry can carry him, or Draymond Green is off, Curry and Klay can, they just have so many opportunities now because they have so many great players on one roster.
Put yourself in Steve Kerr's shoes for me a minute here, Vinny, and you look at this team now, and there's a lot that's going to have to happen to it over the next month or so. You're going to see Harrison Barnes be renounced. Andrew Bogut's going to get traded somewhere else. The roster is going to be filled out with veteran minimums and whatever. I just saw Jermaine O'Neal is talking about coming out of retirement. I don't even know if that's real or not, but that's, you're going to see some evolution to this roster in the coming months. But with these four guys, what is Steve Kerr's biggest challenge right now?
Well, the biggest challenge always when you have that much talent is making sure a couple things. One, guys are going to have to sacrifice. Any great teams, any championship teams, you're going to have to sacrifice. Durant's going to have to sacrifice shots. Klay is. Curry is. But the way that Golden State wants to play with their roster, they want to play up-tempo. They're going to shoot a lot of threes. And like you said, look at all the shots that Harrison Barnes had. And Harrison Barnes is a very good player. But when you're talking about a Kevin Durant, that's a whole nother level. You can run elbow stuff with Durant. You can play big. You can play small. He's versatile. He's off the dribble. You can isolate him. Now, you go on a double team on Durant. Now you got Curry and Klay Thompson on the weak side shooting threes. You could also space Draymond Green if you wanted to give Kevin more room. So I think the biggest thing for Steve is going to be managing the shots, managing these players. But I'll tell you, Steph's a great kid. Klay's a great kid. Durant's a great kid. Draymond Green is as competitive as they come. So, I think they've already talked about it. They've already figured it out in terms of that because Durant feels very comfortable because he's going to go there. So there have to have been some conversations how it's all going to work out in their meetings. And Durant felt comfortable with that. And we'll see how it all pans out. But right now on paper, it's hard to even fathom having to defend that lineup.
Yeah, and two reasons I think it has the potential to work maybe more than other groupings of star players together. Number one is that system that you talked about. I mean, it's a ball movement type of system, and you got a bunch of unselfish players participating in it. And I do think that it was discussed in this meeting how exactly it was going to work. And the other part of it is that these guys, this group of players, they're all very singularly focused. I remember asking Klay Thompson early last season when Luke Walton was still coaching the team, Klay, do you ever envision the day where you might want your own team? Because Klay Thompson could be, the star on half the teams probably in the league right now. And he kind of looked at me and sort of shrugged and said, winning is just so much fun. And you get that same vibe off of guys like Curry and Draymond Green. This team might be the perfect confluence. And I keep using that word because all this stuff kind of has come together perfectly. But the perfect mixture of players that are huge names and huge stars but are agreeable to sacrificing some of that.
Well, and as to this point, how can you blame them? They win 60, 70 games a year. They've won a championship together. They're still in the prime of their career. They're adding the ultimate team guy and scoring champion at Kevin Durant. Are you kidding me? The travel's easier. The practices are better. The food tastes better. Everything when you're winning at the clip they are. So why wouldn't Kevin want to be a part of that? Why wouldn't Steph and Klay and Draymond and their organization want Kevin to be a part of that? So obviously there's a big comfort factor there. It's a shame for Oklahoma City. You feel bad for them because they've been such a staple. They're going to have to reevaluate. But, Westbrook has one more year. Who knows what he's going to do? So at the end of the day, right now, teams are just trying to put their rosters together. And, Golden State got the big free agent in Durant. There's been a lot of moving parts. But I'll tell you what, you sit back and you look at it. Kevin Durant must like the Bay Area. It could not have been an easy decision for him. He's been in Oklahoma City so long. But Billy Donovan's going to have to reevaluate the roster and how they're going to do things. But it's Kevin's decision. That's the way the market is. That's the way the rules are. And he decided to go that route.
You know what I wonder when it comes to Oklahoma City, and only Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook can answer this question, but it does make me wonder if all the chatter about the relationship between those two guys, was it as strong as it needed to be, or was it overblown, the negativity kind of around them? Was that a variable here? I know that nobody can answer it but them, but the reason this is not analogous to LeBron leaving and going to Miami is that LeBron left a bunch of teammates that stunk. They were, you left, guys that weren't anywhere close to his level. Kevin Durant is walking away from one of the top five or six players in basketball in Russell Westbrook. He's leaving a team that has Steven Adams, who I think in the next year maybe is going to be a top five, top six center in all the NBA. You add Oladipo to that mix, and yeah, you lose Ibaka, and I get all that, but I wonder, Vinny, and I don't know if you wonder the same, but I wonder if this could have anything to do with that relationship.
Well, yeah, and the only thing I would say is there's been different speculations about it. Those guys have been together for years. They're two of the top players, like you said, in the league. But at the end of the day, Kevin is leaving one of the top five players in the league to go play with the two-time MVP, Klay Thompson, who you would have to say is probably the best all-around two-guard at both ends of the court in the game, or as good as any of them. And then also Draymond Green, an all-star, a versatility player, a defensive player, a guy that can stretch the floor in a great city, coming in with a new arena. They can play together for several years. They're all in the prime of their careers. They're still young. So they can create a type of dynasty that Kevin wants to be a part of. So I understand that about Russell. There'll be a lot of speculations here or there. But Russell and Kevin had had tremendous success for a lot of years, went to finals, Western Conference finals, but they could never get that elusive championship. And now it looks like it's pretty much lost in gold in Oklahoma City for a bit. And it's going to take a long time because there's no Kevin Durant walking on. I guarantee you that.
Yeah. And I, you know, personally, if you're going to make odds for the MVP next year, I'd put Westbrook maybe right at the top just because of how many shots he's probably going to take. And you might see, you know, sort of glimpses of that Russell Westbrook that we saw while Durant was hurt when he was an MVP candidate. And if Durant had been out that entire season, you might have had Russell Westbrook, you know, win the MVP. But it does
well, –
yeah, go ahead.
But in saying that, Chris, too, I mean, you have to look at it. His stats will be off the charts because he's incredible, Westbrook. But are they going to win enough games for him to warrant that? I mean, you know, you look in past histories, a lot of the MVPs were guys that were leading their teams to one of the top records in the league. Obviously, LeBron winning the championship, coming back, you know, he's always going to be in the mix. The Steph Currys, the Kevin Durants, the list goes on. There's going to be a number of them. But, yeah, Westbrook's numbers are going to be off the charts, as they always are, because he's an incredible player.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You've got to have team success usually to win an MVP. But he is.
And I'm not saying Oklahoma City won't. I just, obviously, they're not going to have the success when you don't have a Kevin Durant.
You know, I honestly, Vinny, I think they're probably still a top five team in the Western Conference. You know, even without Durant, as crazy as that sounds.
Possibly, but at the end of the day, you know, with Durant, they're a top two team.
Yeah, and a real contender, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt about that.
And, you know, they're thinking of hanging a banner with Durant, and right now they're trying to figure out, okay, you know, Westbrook sprains a knee or an ankle, and we might not make the playoffs.
Yeah, it really sucks, too, for a small market team that really has done everything right. Yeah, I mean, they've done everything right up until this point. They've operated as the NBA wants a small market team to operate, which is to draft extremely well. I mean, they have. They're maybe the best drafting team outside of San Antonio in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years, and making shrewd trades. I mean, the James Harden trade, you know, will kind of live in infamy in Oklahoma City, but now you have Steven Adams as a result of it. He's turned out to be, you know, probably a borderline all-star kind of caliber player. Down the line, and even though they lost Ibaka, they got pretty good value back for him in return. They just do everything right, and then, you know, something like this happens. And part of it has to do with all this stuff with the CBA and the lack of smoothing, but it just sucks to see a franchise that's so well run, you know, have this happen to them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've been one of the most successful teams in the league for years because of their talent. Like you said, what they've drafted, fans are unbelievable. It's interesting you go back to the Harden thing. If they had kept James Harden in hindsight, which is always easy, and they had won a championship by now and kept that core together and the cap goes up and they can afford it because it's a small market team and the TV money comes up and all that, you know, does that mean Kevin Durant would have stayed there because they had won a championship or two? Probably. I don't know, but it's hindsight. But that's why these decisions are not easy. You're not always going to make the right ones. But the way a lot of these star players, you know, the LeBrons, the Kevin Durants, they can afford to sign the two-year deals with the one-year outs and take control of their destiny and go where they want to go. I'd like to see guys stay. But, you know, at the end of the day, the way the league is, team guys are ganging up. They're teaming together to win championships. It helps them in their endorsements. It helps them in their appearances. It helps them in every aspect in a lot of ways. So, in a way, you can't blame them. Although Oklahoma City was right on the doorstep of going to the finals. I'm not saying they would have beat Cleveland, but I would have said they would have got to the finals, would have definitely changed maybe some things for everybody.
You know what's interesting, too, is that one of the other news items that kind of went under the radar today, my colleague Adrian Wojnarowski over at the Vertical reported that Tim Duncan was strongly leaning towards retiring and finishing his career up after a long and decorated career. It's interesting because I feel like if Duncan had come back, and I know Duncan was not the player last year that he was in previous years, but if Duncan had come back, and if the Spurs had been able to add Pau Gasol to that mix, which still could very much happen, this might be the year San Antonio could get Golden State. Just because everything coming together, some adjustments, this might have been the year that San Antonio would be able to knock off Golden State and get one more championship.
Possibly. You never can underestimate San Antonio, no question about it. Maybe Duncan is retiring because they're getting Gasol. Maybe, you know what I mean? So who knows? I mean, I played with him his rookie year. He's an incredible player, person, sacrifice. He's about winning. I mean, he's going to go down as the greatest power forward. But He's been a staple there, but the organization has done a great job putting players around him so he could play the 19, 20 years or whatever he wants to at a high level. He had his moments last year. Is he the same player? No, but how many players are the same when they're 19th year as a big man in this league? It just is so rare. But whatever he decides, he'll be comfortable with. He still loves to play. He still works on his game, and you know, whatever he decides, he deserves.
You don't think that? I mean, do you think that the Spurs would have a shot against that Golden State team? I just look at San Antonio. You could speak to this better than I could, but you know, whenever they can find something to like motivate them a little bit, like getting beat by Miami, and that year was 2013, and then you know that whole season afterwards was all about coming back and winning a championship that year. You know, everyone kind of ordaining Golden State as the greatest team ever. With Durant on, I feel like that would have stuck in the heads of some of the guys in San Antonio who have, you know, enough talent on both sides of the floor to maybe make a run. Did you think that San Antonio team could do something like that?
You can never underestimate San Antonio. I mean, the thing that gets in their side is, you know, everyone's anointing Golden State because of their record, and they won a championship a couple seasons ago. But let's not forget, Duncan has 5, and Ginobili and Parker have 4,
yeah.
I believe. So, like, they're like, okay, you're anointing them. We won 4 or 5 championships here. They've won 1. So, you know, but, hey, Golden State's earned it the last couple of years. San Antonio's earned it through the last 19 years with, you know, David Robinson, Tim Duncan, and the different players they've had. But those guys have always been the staple and the foundation there in San Antonio, obviously with Coach Popovich. So nothing goes against Parker and Ginobili, Duncan. And the thing is Kawhi Leonard is such a superstar player now. I mean, he's as good as there is at both ends, especially defensively, and what he's done to his game offensively, the way he shot the 3 last year. Parker has to be healthy. He's the engine. He's the spark plug that gets that engine rolling. He's the guy, and he needs to be healthy, playing at a high level for them to beat any top team, and they know that.
You got to think the NBA in the league office, they hate this. I mean, they have to hate that. You know, after all they've done to create parity, that you have another super team forming that, you know, look, I mean, maybe it's San Antonio, maybe it's Cleveland, but, you know, if you're making odds right now, it's Golden State by a lot to win the championship next year. The league's got to hate that.
But, you know, the other thing, Chris, is, you know, is now that all these contracts are getting signed and these astronomical amounts of money and things going to players, everywhere I go, can you believe this guy signed for this? And I think the NBA is going to have to do a good job, you know, kind of supporting the fans, which they've always done. But hey, you know, these guys are making astronomical types of money, and everyone's like, you know, who is this guy? He got this amount of money. Who is this? He got this amount. Now the league has got to do a good job with the ticket prices, what the fan experience is going to be like. People are out there working hard. They're coming to use their hard-earned money to come to games. And, you know, hey, not all the products are that great. There's some teams that really struggle out right there, and it goes in cycles. I get it. But I think the money can also drive some people away saying that's just astronomical. And some of these deals are just incredible. And like I said before, it's only going to get better for the players, which I'm happy for being an ex-player. But at the end of the day, the PR and the marketing machine of the NBA, I think, has to be on top of this, because the fans out there have to feel appreciated and have to have that experience at the games that they're, you know, that makes sense.
No, I'm with you. I think there has to be some kind of trickle down, whether it's a moratorium on ticket prices going up, or, you know, more money for like support staff, Vinny. I mean, you know as well as I do the difference between what players and coaches and the owners are making versus, you know, some of the guys that are on the support staffs there across the league. And I don't want to be the guy beating the drum for the assistant equipment manager or whatever, but, you know, there's a lot of money being handed out there for a lot of the top-tier guys, and they've earned it, because the NBA, you're worth what somebody's going to pay you. But I would like to see, you know, with the average fan not getting gouged, or some of these support staff guys getting paid a little bit more, you would like to see something change in that respect as well.
I think so, and I think it would be good for the NBA, and I'm for sure positive that the commissioner and everyone's looking at that. But, you know, it's hard for people to fathom some of these guys that are averaging 5 points a game getting $40 million, and you know, it's just you know how people are. I mean, it's human nature. But at the end of the day, the NBA has done a great job marketing their product worldwide. All these international games that we've been doing for 25 years in Beijing, Shanghai, London, Mexico City, where have you, all over the world, has really drawn in a different and a global game and a global audience that has expanded the TV contracts, which runs obviously a huge part of all this because of the new TV deal. So that's a great business model, but now the model has to trickle down, I think, to the fans, especially some of these teams that are going to struggle that, you know, from a ticket price standpoint, it's got to make sense. And I think the NBA will definitely be looking at that.
Think about what you could have made, Vinny, back in the day. I mean, if this money was out there, 95, 96, you averaged 14.5 points per game. That would have been worth like $100 million right now.
But, you know, it's fine. You know, and yeah, me and some of the guys, I was with Dan Marley the other day, and we were talking, and Dan was a two-time All-Star. He'd have been like 150 or
easy.
Whatever, but million. But at the end of the day, you know, we look at it, and I'm saying to myself, hey, I was so fortunate. I've been fortunate. I've played a long time. I've been able to coach, be in the league, front office, TV, whatever. But at the end of the day, there was players that played before me that were better players than I was, that made half as much as I did or a quarter of what I did. Now there's players that aren't even as good as me that are making 10 times more than I made. But that's the thing. You're fortunate to play. You know, you want to have longevity. You want to be respected when you retire about how you went about being a pro. And, hey, I love the players are getting the money. I love it. I just think you got to make sense of it. And, hey, you better have a strong organization, strong general manager, strong coaching staff to handle this because, you know, players making this kind of money, you have to be able to get a team and a chemistry and environment and a culture about winning and about doing the right thing.
All right, but admit this. Could you take Tyler Johnson in a game of one-on-one right now?
Right now, no, because I can't move. But if it was just a straight shooting contest, I'll go up against pretty much anybody. But if I have to move too much, now, if I could just play zone, I could probably just stand there and jump around a little bit. But running would be a problem with these old knees. But the shooting is still good.
Vinny, I appreciate it, man. Keep up the great work, and we'll catch up again soon. All right.
Anytime, bud. Happy 4th, and good to talk to you.
Thanks, Vinny.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
My thanks to Vinny Del Negro for joining the podcast. Bobby Marks from the Vertical is coming up next. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about T-Mobile. With just one swing, home runs can be the ultimate game changer. At T-Mobile, we know how to change the game for good. T-Mobile is always listening and always improving by listening to our customers. We've doubled our LTE coverage to reach 309 million Americans, and our extended range LTE reaches two times further and is four times stronger in buildings than ever before. Just as our network has you covered, T-Mobile has the home run derby covered too. Want to have some fun? The home run derby really is fun, isn't it? Fill out a bracket for the home run derby. Make your picks in T-Mobile's home run derby bracket challenge at T-Mobile.com/MLB for a chance to win a trip for four to game one of the World Series. T-Mobile, we're changing the game for good. LTE doubled over 2015 and 16. No purchase necessary to enter a win. N7-10-16, open to legal residents of the 50 U.S. states and D.C., 18 years or older, void where prohibited. For official rules and complete details, visit MLB.com/bracket challenge.
It's the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
Welcome back. As promised, I want to bring in Bobby Marks, the front office insider over at the Vertical. He was part of our draft coverage, big part of our free agency coverage, and a big part of what we're doing right now, talking more about Kevin Durant. You can check his piece up on the finances and the breakdown for Durant for Oklahoma City up on thevertical.com, and Bobby joins me here on the podcast. Bobby, make some sense of this financially for me here first. The ramifications for Golden State in signing Kevin Durant, how do they do it, and what does it mean in terms of flexibility going forward for Oklahoma City?
Well, a couple of things. As we've seen, you know, with Barnes, you know, to fit the Durant number in the, you know, the $26.5 million, we had talked all along there would kind of be a domino effect if he ever did commit there. And I think we've seen that with, you know, Barnes agreeing with, you know, Dallas, Bogey getting traded, with throwing the qualifying offer on Azili, and then basically probably renouncing most of all your free agents there to fit that in there. So he'll slide into that room that's been created, and now the challenge for the Warriors will be filling out that bench as far as, you know, you'll have your minimum exception, and your room mid level, which would be projected to be right around 2.9. So you've got a bunch of open holes. You know, you have to figure out who's going to play center for you, and as well as your backups at the four. You need some shooting, off the bench, and and it creates a little bit of a challenge for next year also, because Durant has non-bird rights. His max number will be $35 million. So you'll have to carve out that room. You can do it and also bring back Curry, but you'll probably risk losing Iguodala and Sean Livingston to do so.
Yeah, that was interesting. You tweeted that earlier today about the $35 million they're going to have to create in room. When you do the numbers, are those the two players that will likely have to go in order to make that happen? Or is there a way for Joe Lacob to keep everybody by paying everybody?
Well, you could say, with Livingston and Iguodala, their cap holds are very high. So the likelihood of, an Andre Iguodala coming in at $16 million, where his cap hold is, and a Sean Livingston at 10 is unlikely. But hey, we just saw Lowell Deng go for 4 for 70.
Yeah.
So, we don't know that. So that's going to be the challenge for the Warriors, is that Curry's cap hold is very low. It's projected right around $18 million. So you could, sign Curry, go over the cap, and, Durant, you can get to that 35, but it's a matter of you're probably going to have a different set of characters as far as for your backups and everything.
Aren't they going to become like the ultimate ring chaser destination, though? Like, aren't the Richard Jeffersons of the world going to just flock there? I mean, I can see them getting two or three guys who are in their mid to late 30s, who can still produce something. And an example, Caron Butler, who's reported he was going to be waived by Sacramento earlier today. Like, Caron Butler would make some sense with that team, a backup small forward who might be able to give you 10 minutes per game. I just feel like, Bobby, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're going to have at least two guys that can contribute something that'll take that low salary offer because they want to get a ring.
You're right. And I think what you'll see for the remaining free agents, outside of maybe some of the bigger names here, is them weighing, going for a championship versus, signing for a big contract. Well, I mean, we're starting to see the money dry up a little bit, but there are still teams, Philly, Brooklyn, Denver, Utah, Minnesota, that still has a lot of money. So, we could see the Richard Jefferson route as far as a player like him going to, Golden State for the minimum, someone who's made a lot of money in their career, where to kind of be on a national stage and, maybe use that as an opportunity to maybe get another payday next year, because we'll see this cap go up to, from 94 to possibly 107, and there'll be a lot more room or money for, teams to sign players.
I guess we shouldn't be surprised that we're here right now, Bobby, should we? I mean, Oklahoma City I always thought was in the driver's seat, but Woj had been reporting for months that Golden State was the greatest threat. I mean, I had thought San Antonio coming into this was a bigger threat for and that's just because what I had been hearing behind the scenes from Oklahoma City people, that they felt the Spurs were a bigger threat than Golden State. But, I mean, how surprised are you that Kevin Durant, a four-time scoring champion, an MVP, he's basically just, I don't want to call him jumping on the bandwagon, but he's joining up with three players that are, on his level?
I'm surprised. I'm not stunned. I think the LeBron decision in 2010 basically washed away for me to ever be stunned about anything. And you're right. And, I was asked this question earlier, if they had won, if they had won game six against Golden State, would we be talking about this? And I don't think we would be.
No.
And that's the shocking part, because I really thought that once they got past San Antonio and even losing to Golden State in seven games, that it would have, that it, for him to remain there was almost a sure bet. And I think when we saw this process, when he started meeting with the teams, then it starts, you start thinking about it, you creeps in your mind a little bit. And I was surprised, when I heard the news today about him going to Golden State, just because I thought with what he had in Oklahoma City, even if he was going to do the 1 year, contract, that gave him a tremendous opportunity, just based on logistically, they would not have to move a lot of parts around.
Yeah, and I mentioned this to Vinny too. I don't think that, not only do I think this doesn't happen if Oklahoma City beats Golden State, I don't think it happens if Golden State wins a title. If they don't blow their own 3-1 lead, I'm not sure that Kevin Durant, in his own mind, could have justified just sort of clinging to a team. He would have become the ultimate ring chaser in that sense, because that team would have won back-to-back championships. They would have been at least in the conversation for the greatest team of all time. I'm not sure that Kevin jumps on board that train if Golden State doesn't choke away that 3-1 lead to the Cavs.
Well, and it has created such a domino effect. I mean, there are, you know, if Durant, the interesting thing is if Durant had gone back to Oklahoma City today, we would have probably seen status quo amongst the league when we would have saw the Gasol news and everything. But it just created such a, Bogut to Dallas, Barnes to Dallas. There were so many moving pieces and everything. And yeah, no, I mean, how could you have broken up that team if Golden State had won it all and tried to come back for a three-peat? I mean, that would have taken, you know, a lot of guts to go after Durant in that case. And, you know, a series that you're up 3-1, you wind up losing, in seven, you wind up landing, you know, Kevin Durant as the consolation prize.
And where I take exception to the comparisons to 2010 is that LeBron's team stunk back then. Like, he left a team that turned out to be straight garbage without him. I mean, they were a lottery team, first overall pick. That was the year, I believe, they got Kyrie Irving with the number one overall spot. The team that Kevin Durant's leaving behind is still a playoff team. They might win 45 to 47 games next year if Russell Westbrook has the type of year, I think, where he's capable of having. He's leaving behind a great, great team to go play for Golden State. I mean, think about it. With the losses that Cleveland has already incurred, and I don't want to, you know, overstate the loss of Matthew Dellavedova, Timothy Mozgov, and potentially Richard Jefferson, but with the losses they incurred off their bench, you can make a realistic argument that it's neck and neck, Golden State, Oklahoma City, and Cleveland for the championship next year, can't you?
Yeah, no, you certainly can. And I still see that Thunder team as probably top five, probably four, five, six, somewhere around there, how they are, built right now. It'll be interesting what they do with cap space. And there's not much left on the board. Waiters is still, restricted. What will they do with him? They've never been a player in free agency. And I think the biggest signing they've ever had was Anthony Morrow, and that was at like $3.4 million. So they've always been known to build this team through the draft and through trades. And that will be the interesting what direction, Sam Presti and this group in Oklahoma City goes as far as what you do with, potentially $20 to $23 million. Do you do anything with Westbrook? But that doesn't really make much sense if you want to go the renegotiation route, especially from Westbrook's case. And there's not much left there. And you don't want to overpay just in case Westbrook does leave next year and you're stuck with some bad contracts on your books.
Yeah, why would Westbrook even consider renegotiating his contract? That makes no sense.
He shouldn't. I mean, he would lose all his leverage. But, his number's right around $17.8 million. They can renegotiate his contract and bump him up to the max salary slot of it if they have cap room, which is at $26.5 million. But you can only add another 3 years. So why wouldn't you go into free agency with the option of either signing 4 years with another team starting at $30 million, or you could sign with Oklahoma City for 5 years starting at 30. It's a big gap there.
If you're Oklahoma City right now, put yourself in Sam Presti's position, which is not, at the moment, not an enviable one right now. What is your position on Westbrook this summer? Like, Sam has never shied away from making a deal if he thought he was going to lose the player. He did with James Harden. He did it with Serge Ibaka very recently. Is Westbrook different because of his status, or do you have to treat Westbrook the same?
I think you have to treat him the same. And a guy who's going to go out as an unrestricted free agent, you have already gone through it with Durant. And I thought, Sam handled it right with Kevin just based on how this team was going. And you're not going to move a guy like him, during the season or before the season. But I certainly would want to have a sit down with Russell Westbrook and kind of get an idea as far as what his head is and what he's thinking, for the long term here. And, if there's not a comfort level after that discussion, I certainly would want to get some feelers out there. And I've always said, if you're going to move a guy on an expiring contract, you do it during the summer. You don't wait during the year, because I think you can get the most value, back on it. We saw what Sam did with Serge Ibaka at the draft. You wound up getting two lottery picks, Oladipo and Sabonis, as well as Ilyasova. And I think, if you don't feel that Westbrook is part of the future, then you certainly have to, you got to protect the organization. That's what you have to do.
Yeah, but there's only a finite number of teams that'll give you what Russell Westbrook is worth. Like, the only teams that are going to give you real value back for Westbrook are the teams that believe they have a shot at re-signing him, right? I mean, you're not going to, you know, a team like Phoenix is not going to give you, not going to gut its roster to get you Russell Westbrook. Boston probably would if they knew Westbrook would re-sign, but they have no idea. They would have no idea at that point. I mean, is he, he's a pretty complicated player to trade, isn't he?
Well, that's the challenge, is that you don't know if he's going to be, you can retain him, and, you know, and you don't know, you know, what it would cost you to gut your team like that. And I think it would be a lot more easier as far as from a trade standpoint if we were still at a $70 million cap and maybe three or four teams had room going into the, you know, next summer. But we're going to see the same scenario next summer, you know, $107 million. Basically, even though with all these big numbers, teams with will have that $30 million max slot. So if it's the Lakers and it may be the Clippers, you know, those two Los Angeles teams, maybe Miami, you know, some of these bigger names, you know, for Westbrook, you know, next year and everything. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm a team that, you know, can possibly win, you know, win a championship with him, would you want to, you know, risk putting, you know, a lot of your assets to the middle to do so? That is a very difficult question.
What do you think life is like in the NBA office in New York on Tuesday? What do you think they're talking about on Tuesday?
Well, you know, what's interesting, Chris, is that we're almost seeing the same parallels as from 2010. So we had the big three in Miami with James, Bosh, Wade. And then we saw a lockout the following year. So we're seeing it right now. We've seen the drastic move with Durant going to Golden State. We've seen an abundance of money that we can't even keep up with right now. And we've potentially could have a new CBA and both sides opting out in December. So, I mean, that's going to be the interesting thing to follow, you know, as we go into, you know, into the season, as far as where these talks are going to go. And are there going to be a lot of these owners from some of these smaller markets are going to raise their hand and say, hey, let's look at this. I know the TV money's coming in, but, you know, can we maybe do something to change the system a little bit? That would be, you know, a big challenge there.
Yeah, I would think Oklahoma City would be leading that charge, wouldn't they? to change the – I mean, the one thing, Bobby, was that the NBA doesn't think they blew this. You know, the NBA doesn't think that they screwed up at all. But in my mind, they kind of did. Maybe they couldn't have predicted exactly how much TV money was going to come in, but they knew that TV deal was going to go up. Like, not negotiating this whole smoothing stuff they tried to sort of jam in a little bit later on, or, you know, in the process, not negotiating the cap smoothing back in 2011 before they ended the lockout, I think that, you know, that has created this circumstance, hasn't it? I mean, that put the Warriors, in addition to, you know, Steph Curry having a cheap contract, but, you know, this type of cap space is what opened the door for the Warriors, where otherwise it wouldn't be.
Well, you're right, and if we would have had smoothing, we wouldn't have seen this number jump to $94 million, and it would have been more of a challenge for, you know, Golden State to fit Durant's number in there. So it's a little bit of both sides. I mean, we can blame the PA, we can blame the league, you know, but you know, at the end of the day here, it's a shared, you know, joint venture between both of them to figure out what's the best for the NBA. And right now, what we saw this summer is not what is the best for the NBA as far as how much money is being spent on these guys. And I don't fault the players or the agents at all for going this direction, because it's, you know, it's money and they can be taken care of for a long time. But we've seen now, we can all say that there's parity in the NBA, but there is no parity in the NBA. This is not the NFL. So we're going to see the same teams, Cleveland and Golden State, in the finals next year. And maybe San Antonio can make some noise, and I doubt anybody from the East. So how much parity do we have here?
No, we don't have any parity. I mean, unless something happens, unless this mix is so bad and becomes like the Lakers when Dwight and Steve Nash went there and injuries happened and all that crap. But there's nothing that can stop this team. I don't believe it. I mean, they're going to fill this roster with junk, spare parts. You know, there'll be some Chris Kaman-like center, you know, playing, you know, 25 minutes a night. But most times they're going to be able to get away with inferior second units, because their second unit's always going to have two Hall of Famers on it, basically. It's always going to have two in their prime MVP candidates on it at all times. I mean, the NBA, you know, a big part of that 2011 lockout was trying to establish a system that would let the small market succeed. If the small market teams were smart, they would be able to succeed. Now you have probably 4 years, if not more, of one team controlling the entire landscape, and I think that's bad for the NBA, no matter how many rating numbers a team like Golden State does.
Well, you know what's also interesting is that Golden State has went from the darlings as far as a team that was built the right way. They had built through the draft, made some smart trades with Curry, Green, Thompson, the Iguodala trade, the Boga trade, and now they're, I think they have surpassed Cleveland as public enemy number one right now, as far as with a big target on their back from, you know, not just, you know, the other 29 teams, but, you know, I could see them, you know, really having a lot of disdain with, you know, the general public as far as how this team now has basically been put with the Durant addition.
Yeah, I mean, Cleveland was so venomous, or sort of just negativity inspiring because of how they built that team, like the decision to that stupid smoky press conference that I can still remember of not one, not two. I don't think that Golden State's going to do any of that crap, but they're not going to be likable, you know, that's for sure. And Kevin Durant, I mean, he's probably going to win championships out there, and, you know, that's the ultimate goal for him, of course. But this, you know, LeBron, when he went to Cleveland, if he had gone back to Miami, he could have won more championships, no question, but a championship in Oklahoma City, to me, means more than what he could win in Golden State. Just like for LeBron, when he went back to Cleveland, a championship there is probably worth two or three in Miami, isn't it?
No, you're right. I mean, to win a championship where you were drafted by, where you signed your rookie extension, you've kind of grew up with that organization, it's a lot different than, you know, going to a different place where you're kind of the new guy, you're the addition. You weren't drafted there. So yeah, I agree with you. There is a big difference from that aspect. Hey, maybe in 4 years from now, we'll be talking about Kevin Durant back in Oklahoma City like LeBron did, you know, back in Cleveland and everything. But it's a tough pill to swallow if you are a fan of the Thunder, if you are part of that organization, because, you know, I know it is sports, but the impact of his decision has a trickle-down effect, just not just on, you know, the, you know, people who attend the games, but a lot of people who work within that organization. So it is the tough, you know, aspect of what we do and everything.
What do you do if you're, say, Neil Olshey in Portland, or even a Danny Ainge in Boston, or I guess it's more locally, you know, it's more about the Western Conference, Doc Rivers, you know, with the Clippers, where you've got good teams, but you just can't compete. I mean, does this change how you approach building your team at all if you're one of those executives, or do you just keep trying to add layers onto your group and, I don't know, I mean, sounds stupid, but hope something bad happens out in Oakland?
Well, I think you've got to have, as far as from a stability standpoint, as far as I think what you've seen with the Clippers is that, you know, they re-signed, Rivers, Johnson, Crawford. They bring back three guys. And basically the whole team is back. So at least there is a, you know, from a bench standpoint, from your starters, that you can kind of hit the ground running. You can say that the same thing with Portland, you know, depends on what they do with, you know, Harkless, Crabbe, and Myers Leonard. You know, you added Evan Turner. So at least there's not much of a changing of the guard there, so that these guys have played together for, you know, a couple of years and everything. So that's the challenge for Golden State. As, you know, they've got the, you know, the big, I guess now we can call them the big four and everything, as far as what, you know, other pieces do they have, and how does everyone kind of fit into what their role is.
Yeah, and next year especially, San Antonio, I mean, I know Woj reported that Tim Duncan was leaning towards retirement. I'd love to see Tim Duncan come back for one more year, because if there's a chance to get Golden State, it's probably going to be next year when they're, you know, trying to fit these guys together, when they're trying to flesh out their bench a little bit. I would love to see Duncan make one more run at it.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've kind of poo-pooed the whole Gasol thing to San Antonio, and that's a pretty good addition right there. I mean, you've got Gasol, Aldridge, Leonard, Green, Parker, Mills, that group right there. So I would not discount them one bit. And you've got probably the best coach in the NBA and one of the best GMs in the NBA that can kind of, you know, fill in the pieces. So, and they play a certain style that's, you know, pretty hard to, you know, play against. So I would not discard them.
Do you think any differently of Kevin Durant right now than you did yesterday?
No, because it's free agency and it's always the unpredictable. And as much as we want to, act like a fan. And, you know, we do realize it is a business. I think for the 10-year-olds out there, like my son, who is a diehard Thunder fan and where has Kevin Durant jerseys hanging up in his closet and wears his clothes, I think this hurts, you know, but you have to explain it's sports. And we rarely see our favorite players ever stay with the same team.
Yeah, and I'm not, you know, Kevin Durant's a grown man. He can do whatever he wants. You know, he wants to go play for Golden State, live in San Francisco. We've all made those types of choices in our own lives, and we've all chased what's made us happy and whatever. My only issue is now it feels like it makes the entire season somewhat anticlimactic. It just, you know, you've got a whole season going on. You've got some ups and downs. You've got some good games. You've got some teams entering the playoffs that are hot, some good storylines, but you know, it just feels like nobody's going to be able to compete with them. Even Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland is the defending champs, but, you know, think about, I mean, I brought this up with Vinny Del Negro. Like, if you put Kevin Durant in the position Harrison Barnes was in, that's a 4-game series. You know, Harrison Barnes missed so many shots in that series. You know, if Kevin Durant is replacing Barnes, that's a blowout. And I think it will be a blowout if they wind up playing each other again.
Well, and that's why when we wrote back in February and we started talking about Durant to Golden State, and you know, I wrote the piece as far as breaking it down, and I kind of posed the question, you know, would you trade, you know, Barnes, Bogut, you know, I guess it was Azili or something like that. Maybe we even had Iguodala in there. For Durant, and the public perception from Warrior fans was that, I think we put, they ran a poll out there, it was like 74 to 26 that they didn't want him. And I said, well, wait a minute here. You can have one of the best players in the NBA, and you're going to lose guys that are kind of in their twilight of their year, or kind of, you might have to overpay. And that's the thing. So when you roll out, and I think we're missing the boat here. If you rolled out Durant with Curry, Thompson, Green, Iguodala, and Durant as your five to end games, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Who do you stop? I mean, how do you defend that?
I don't think you can. Thinking of a Curry Durant pick and roll, I mean, what do you do there? I mean, Durant isolation on the wing, who do you leave? I mean, I'm convinced that Draymond Green is going to spend the entire summer becoming the best 3-point shooter he can possibly be, because how many open looks is he going to get next year? Iguodala, I mean, just learn to stand in the corner and shoot threes. He's already pretty good at it. But I mean, I think Steve Kerr, if he's a smart coach, and he is, we'll tell these guys, all right, this is where, in these sets, this is where you're most likely going to be open. And they're going to become very proficient at it in the exact same way Bruce Bowen did back in his Spurs days.
No, you're right. And, you know, but the interesting thing, well, I mean, and you've still got Livingston off your bench. You've got, you know, Damon Jones, who you drafted from Vanderbilt, Iguodala. It'll be interesting what player would commit there as far as from a two-guard standpoint, and as far as if you can find, you know, can you get Spates back maybe? Would he take a pay cut and come back for the 2-9, you know, room mid-level? I don't know. That's a, you know, a small number for him and everything. But if I'm Golden State, I am, you know, managing these guys' minutes, even if it's, you know, risk of losing some games and everything, because you want this team nice and fresh when it comes to playoffs next year.
You know where we are, Bobby? We are in full-on meetings era where all these players become recruited like college. Think about next summer when Westbrook's a free agent and Durant, at least nominally, will be a free agent. LeBron could actually decide to be a real free agent if he decides, oh, you know, maybe it's time to leave Cleveland. I mean, is this where we're at right now, where every, you know, recruiting of a player comes down to so much more than the best contract?
Well, we saw in 2010, you know, that's when it started the trend of, you know, these meetings and with players and agents and teams and everything. And I've said all along, this summer is the appetizer to next summer when we are going to get, you know, Durant probably again on the market, and, you know, probably back to Golden State, and James and Curry and Paul and Griffin and Westbrook and Hayward, Millsap, you know, and in a big number in the cap and everything. So if we were only focused on the Durant meetings, you know, the first, you know, 5 or 6 days of July, could you imagine what next summer is going to be like?
Oh, it's crazy.
I mean, we're going to have satellite meetings everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll be, you know, teams will be lined up out the door like we saw with LeBron James in 2010.
If you can envision something derailing Golden State this year, and it's not injuries the same way, you know, Steve Nash's injury kind of screwed up the Lakers back in the day and some other of these, quote, your super team out in Brooklyn with KG and Pierce, they were just a little bit too old.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
at that point. If you can envision something derailing this group, what could it be?
Well, I mean, I think it would be easy to say, you know, from a selfish standpoint, but I think they've got a bunch of unselfish players.
Yeah.
You can look just at what they're being paid, you know. And I said with Green and Thompson, if those guys had signed max contracts, they wouldn't have been able to get Durant, because the $3 million they left on the table helped, you know, offset the cost and everything. So I don't think we can use that as an excuse if things don't work there. And I think we probably go back to depth, you know, as far as, you know, what, and as also matchups. What are your matchups when you get to the playoffs, as far as if a team is going to kind of, you know, pound you in the boards, and who are your rebounders going to be? So I think if anything, it's going to be, you know, what we see in the next week with Golden State, as far as what they'll be able to do, as far as, you know, adding those players around this, you know, great group. It was a little bit different with Brooklyn. We had great depth with, you know, Livingston and Allen Anderson and Blotch and Poletovic and that group, but our starters were, you know, we had, you know, KG and Paul were older and past their prime, and Brooke had gotten hurt. So I think with Golden State, if you're going to look at a weak link or a chink in the armor, you know, I think it's going to have to be their depth here.
I think they need to have like invincible style tryouts for one spot. Like the 12th or the 15th man can be like a fan. Get him a ring. Or bring back one of the old school guys. Bring back Baron Davis or Steven Jackson. He wants to play. Bring back one of these guys to fill out the roster as like an honorary, you know, thank you to the old Warriors.
Well, I saw Jermaine O'Neal wants back
in. He wants back in.
You know, it'll be interesting. A lot of these players who are, you know, semi retired are, you know, they see this super team being formed and
you know that's coming.
They want back in and everything.
You know, like Charles Barkley. Get him back in. Patrick Ewing. Let's bring him back. Get him a ring. These guys, they need a ring. They need to validate their careers, right? It's going to be fun. Should be a lot of fun watching this team kind of come together next year. I'm just disappointed that you're going to have a few years anyway of a coronation as opposed to competition in the NBA playoffs. Bobby, I appreciate it, my friend. I know you're busy these days. Thanks for hopping on the podcast.
Thanks, Chris. Have a good day.
My thanks to my guests, Vinny Del Negro and The Vertical's Bobby Marks. You can download new and archived episodes of this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Art19.com, and Google Play, and really anywhere you can download podcasts. Subscribe on iTunes. When you do, give us a good rating, leave a review, heck, leave a question, and I'll try to answer it for you right away. And don't forget to check out The Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick and The Vertical Podcast with Woj, too. See you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.